Are you guys ready?
Let's do this.
Let's start the show. Enjoy the show. Enjoy the show. Enjoy the show. Fuck it. Enjoy the show.
Lights, camera, action. All right, episode 7, lucky number 7. Ryan, this is your favorite number, right?
Favorite number, man.
We have a special guest on the podcast tonight, Mr. S.A. Sneaky.
S.A.
Mr. King of the Cosplay, Enrique Dudley. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so this weekend was Comic-Con in San Diego.
Yes, it was.
It was my first time going down there and seeing what was up. Brandon, you went down there?
I had a chance to check it out. It was cool seeing everybody dressed up and, you know, just the excitement around the convention center.
Yeah. Our guest, Enrique, was Rick from Rick and Morty, and your girlfriend was Morty.
Yeah, I was.
Oh, geez, Rick. But, yeah, so Comic-Con, it's, what, your fourth year?
I've been going... I've been lucky enough to get into the convention 4 years in a row. I mean, I've been going to like some of the out, I live in the downtown San Diego area, so I'm very close to the convention center. So there's a lot of different things happening outside that I've been able to, in the past, been able to experience, but lucky enough to get into the convention, which is pretty difficult the last 4 years. So.
Very nice.
You also have the luxury of living downtown. So you don't have too much of a commute, so that must be nice.
Yeah, true.
You don't have to deal with that traffic.
It's a luxury and at the same time a curse.
Oh, it's chaos down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you went, what, Thursday, Friday, Saturday?
Thursday through... I had tickets Thursday through Sunday. I just did a little bit on Sunday. So.
Okay, well, favorite moment of Comic-Con, what was the big standout?
I would probably have to say... I mean, it's always fun to walk the convention floor because I always like seeing different things that either production companies have to offer or little knickknacks here and there. But I was able, growing up, I was a big fan of the Batman animated series TV show, and I was lucky enough to get to sit on the panel for that. So they're putting out like a Blu-ray of all the 85 episodes, so that definitely was a highlight.
Very nice, yeah. So Enrique's on because he's going to come up with a podcast pretty soon going over movies.
You kind of want to you want to tell us a little bit about
it? Yeah,
definitely plug away. Yeah, so hopefully within the next month, I have a podcast coming out with a buddy, Philly Phil. Shout out Philly Phil.
Philly Phil.
It's called Philly Phil. Because You Watched, and we pretty much dive into a movie and then a supporting movie, and kind of we'll have guests on every week, and I'm hoping to pick a movie that our guest that's coming on enjoys, and we'll throw a movie at them as well that hopefully they've seen, and kind of go over that, go over where they were in their life when they saw that, and kind of the good and bad. So that's something you should be that I should have in the works within the next month. It's going to be called Because You Watch. So
very nice.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting.
Ryan, favorite baseball movie?
Ooh, 61. 61. Wow. 61. I don't know if you guys have seen that movie, but it's my all-time favorite baseball movie. It's the story of Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris chasing after the ghost, Great Bambino, Babe Ruth, 60 home runs. It goes through that entire season of, you know, how Roger Maris was just brought on from the Kansas City Royals. I think it was the Kansas City Royals at the time. And how New York just hated him. They despised him. They wanted Mickey to get the record. They had no interest. And it was the year that they tried to put the asterisk on the home run record because of, you know, the length of the season. And so you just saw how this guy went from being a really nice hometown Kansas City person and how New York sort of changed him. But if you guys haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. I can't remember his name, but it's got the same guy that was the original Punisher who plays Mickey Mantle.
Thomas Jane?
I think so. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Huh. So I definitely got to throw it
on the
list.
HBO
I've never
movie.
Seen that.
It's such a good movie.
Awesome. Brandon, what you got?
Moneyball. I loved Moneyball with Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill. Phenomenal movie.
Chris Pratt?
Yeah, Chris Pratt was in there. Yeah, I mean, how could you not like it? Oakland A's with Billy Beane running the front, just kind of frustrated being a small market team. found a way to compete with the big dogs, and unfortunately came up short in the end. But, you know, it's a great story. It's kind of shaped the landscape of baseball right now.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Not only did
definitely a great movie. If you haven't seen it, definitely highly recommend watching it.
Definitely a great movie. The one thing that always drove me nuts about that movie is nobody ever talks about the fact that they had the reigning MVP in Miguel Tejada and the reigning Cy Young winner in Barry Zito. I mean, they're not mentioned throughout the whole movie. Like, oh, they're just this scum team that, you know, that didn't have anybody. I was like, wait a second, guys.
Scott Hatterberg.
Eric Chavez was on that team. It wasn't a bunch of scrubs. They were a good team, but it's a very good movie.
But they still won over 100 games, I think, that year, which is pretty remarkable.
And the big thing is they couldn't keep their superstars.
And they lost Giambi. They lost Johnny Damon. They lost who was their closer, I think, at the time. I can't remember his name. But, they lost three of their frontline guys. And obviously, anytime you lose three of your best players, it's crushing for a team. Yeah. So
it just goes to show the small markets don't have as much
kind of changed the whole landscape of baseball, how we think of it now. With
totally. Analytics is because of that.
So, Enrique, what do you got for us?
I got to go with a children's classic, Sandlot.
Oh, that was mine right there.
I knew he was.
That's my favorite movie.
I knew he was stealing yours.
I mean, those you just got to go. Movies. I mean, Sandlot was just one of those movies that every, like, the last day of school, I would pretty much, my brother and I, who's Brandon on this podcast, we would throw that movie on. That was pretty much the kickoff to summer. And it's just pretty much every child's dream to live that out.
Since you stole mine, my other favorite would have to be Major League.
Ooh, great one.
That's a good one.
Wild Thing.
Wow.
I love that movie.
I'm not a huge Indians fan, so that was the only downtake of that whole movie, but I definitely enjoyed
it. I think there's more like people that are fans of Major League than there are the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah.
They got a good fan base now. They've, you know, lost a World Series.
Too soon.
But all right, so we have a round table thing going. Let's just continue it. In all of Major League Baseball, Major League history, who is the one pitcher that you wouldn't want to hit off of, and who is the one batter you wouldn't want to throw to?
So, I'll start with pitcher. And I pretty much guarantee that this isn't going to be yours. Bob Gibson. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Bob Gibson.
That wasn't even close to mine.
The only reason that I know who he is because when I was younger, we had a pitcher in our pony league that was all over the place. Bob Gibson was, I think he had a ERA of like 1.17 the year that they won the World Series. But his intimidation on the mound, I mean, he would throw at people. He'd throw around people. He didn't smile. He didn't laugh. And he would just glare every single person down. Like, his motivation was to intimidate you as soon as you walked into the box. He wanted to know, this is my plate. You're standing there. I'm not afraid to back you off of it. So maybe not the most popular pick, but Bob Gibson, definitely not somebody that I would want to face against.
All right, hitter?
Barry Bonds. Absolutely. I think everybody's going to be Barry Bonds. I mean, the dude just hits everything. And, I mean, talk about the steroid era all you want. I mean, he still went out there and set the record for most home runs hit. And he did it off of people pitching around him, pitching underneath him, pitching over him. And I still don't know, like, how you get that guy out. I mean, his power to opposite field is phenomenal. I know they brought up the Barry Bonds shift, but he could still hit it out in that direction. Top to bottom, one of the best hitters, if not the best hitter of all time.
All right, B, what you got?
Well, obviously, for hitter, it's definitely Barry Bonds. I mean, they had the there's so many things you can comment on, especially as a Padres fan growing up. He owned the Padres better than any other team in baseball. And, I remember every time they would intentionally walk him, they'd throw those little chickens out on that little line out there because, you know, all the teams were afraid to pitch to him. And he would just stand in that box, and he had just, like, he was just gigantic. And he had the big armor. And he would get hit by pitches because he was hanging, he was crowding the plate. And it was one of those things where, really, I mean, there was no spot you could pitch him and you know you were going to get him out. So you really got to hope that he's just going to get himself out, because he can hit a ball out anywhere it's pitched on the plate. So,
all right, well, who would you not want to hit off of?
Who would I If I was hitting,
if you're the hitter, who are you gonna be most intimidated by?
I'm taking Randy Johnson, hands down.
The big unit.
I mean, he's got a number of stories that go with him, and you know, it goes everywhere from you know the long hair. He actually ends up cutting it towards the end of the year, end of his career. But especially when he was on the Seattle Mariners and the Arizona Diamondbacks, I mean, just watching him pitch, he hit that bird and the bird explodes. I'm sure you've all seen the video. That's insane. And there's all these stories about him throwing at runners after he walks them, you know. And I mean, he just had an electric fastball, and it's really he's one of those guys who's. I still look at him, and he's a photographer, and he's, you know, like taking photos of nature and stuff, and you see him at ballparks and he's taking all these pictures, and you just kind of look at him, and you go from someone who's so intimidating to someone who is, you know, Mr. Nature sensitive guy. It's just kind of an interesting change of character almost.
Yeah. I don't know. That was one guy that he looked like he could smoke in the rain though.
Yeah,
you know, big old nose.
But yeah, that
Enrique, who you got? Sounds like
definitely. I had Randy Johnson. I mean, he just look at him. The guy is scary.
And he's a lefty. I mean, he's like, God.
What is he like? 6'8"?
Six? Yeah, he's towering. He's got he had like the Joe Dirt.
He looked like Joe Dirt. I was gonna say
yeah,
he looked like
exactly
Joe Dirt up there on the mound.
You wouldn't see a smirk off of him.
He had the perfect body type as a pitcher too. He's long. I mean, it feels like he's halfway to the plate when he's throwing the ball at you. And I mean, when he's there, I mean, his whole body is just down there staring at you.
Well, plus he threw plus 100 miles an hour. So
right.
You
exactly.
Got that heat coming at you and. Yeah, that's intimidating.
The big unit.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean,
you earned the name.
Growing up and seeing pitchers like Randy Johnson, I mean, there was intimidating closers like John Rocker.
Oh yeah,
Eric Gagne. Yep. Like those were intimidating closers, whatnot. But like overall,
Billy
like
Wagner, that's the other guy.
Oh yeah,
yeah. There was some great closers, but Randy Johnson go out there and do it for 9 innings.
Yeah, like
and
he
his
was
control
one of
as well. I mean, that's another thing that I mean with. You saw, I don't remember what his name is, but the guy that threw the 104, 105 mile an hour fastball this year.
Aaron Hicks,
Hicks.
He plays for the Cardinals,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he plays for the Cardinals. He got no control over it. I mean, Randy Johnson threw 100 miles an hour down the pipe. I mean,
yeah,
right. Yeah.
So who's the guy you would not want to pitch to?
Well, I mean,
I think
like,
it goes without saying.
Barry Bonds, like.
I think another guy, too, that deserves an honorable mention would be Ichiro Suzuki. I mean, he's obviously doesn't have the same power aspect, but, I mean, good luck pitching to him. If he puts it on the ground, he's running out to first base.
Yeah,
I mean, he hit 350. I know it's not really a rookie year when he came over from the Japanese League, but, I mean, to go into his first season in Major League Baseball and hit 350 is unheard of.
Right.
So, I mean, and he had, 4,000 hits?
Between both leagues.
Yeah, between both leagues. I mean, not an impossible person to pitch to, but damn near impossible. I mean, he could get on base better than most.
Yeah, I kind of went a different direction with it. Just through my childhood, the guy I wouldn't want to pitch to was Derek Jeter because he was my childhood idol. So I wouldn't want to throw to him. One, because if he got a hit off me, I'd feel like shit. And then two, if I struck him out, I'd be like, wait, what? Why is he's terrible.
Yeah.
Then the other guy I went with that I wouldn't want to hit off of was Aroldis Chapman.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That would be.
And not as much control.
That was my other reason. Yeah. Not as much control, and he's throwing like 105 at you.
The dude's got like two pitches, really. I mean, fastball and slider, and they both look the same.
Yeah. Mine was more of like a death reason. Like if I get hit by that, I wouldn't walk the same.
It's really hard because he's not looking at you when he's throwing the ball. It's like, hey, excuse me.
Yeah.
Do you know where that's going?
I will throw an honorable mention towards Albert Pujols, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
definitely deserving. I mean, as a right-handed hitter, too, lefties have it a little bit easier facing majority right-handers. And, I mean, again, he's a guy that came out at 335, I believe, his rookie year. Arguably one of the best rookie seasons ever of all time when you're not just looking at home runs and RBIs, but batting average as well. Up there with the Jose Canseco's and Mark McGuire's.
Aaron Judge, too,
Aaron Judge
last
now
year.
As well. But again, like being able to hit for average on top of not just power.
Yeah, I mean, in reality, anybody in that steroid era I wouldn't have wanted to pitch to because I have terrible locations.
Mark McGuire.
So I would have hit one of them. Like if I hit Ken Caminiti, I'm dying. You know what I mean?
Mark
like
McGuire,
that's,
though,
I'm done.
That, the he was drafted in, I believe, he came out in 1984, so he didn't get on steroids till the early 90s. So that was the crazy part about it, is like, he was a dude that was just big in general, and then you add the steroids into it, he went from hitting 30, 40 home runs to 60, 70 home runs.
All right, Enrique, you're distracting us. You're getting us off on these tangents. So let's get into our real podcast now. Are you guys all right with touching this Tatis thing first?
Yeah, let's
absolutely. Yeah,
like, I mean, that was just terrible news. You
it's
know,
terrible timing.
Yeah, it's terrible timing. I mean,
just with the acquisition of Mejia, you know, looking like we're in a pretty good position. Again, I mean, he's 19 years old. He's got plenty of time to come back from this.
Yeah.
I feel like them holding him out the rest of the year, I mean, he's projected 6 to 8 weeks recovery time, I think is just looking towards next year, because there's a chance that he might be pushing for a starting role next year.
Yeah, you saying bad timing, I almost think it's like good timing.
Yeah, totally.
For this injury. Obviously, no injury is good.
No,
but if he's
I mean bad
get
timing
injured,
from the standpoint of, as we were talking about last week,
exactly,
the high hopes
yeah.
of the Padres and everything, you know, we're talking about that.
Just seems like the baseball gods looking bad.
Yeah,
on us.
Exactly.
I mean, my initial thought was, since we have Freddie Galvis coming off contract this at the end of this year, who's gonna be our shortstop next year? Are we gonna push Tatis, make that jump from Double A to you know, like you said, starting in the majors? I think that's just definitely something that, you know.
Well, I think the best option would be bring up Urias first and let him play at shortstop, get his reps in, his at-bats.
I think Urias
in,
is definitely coming up within the next few
this
weeks.
Year. Yeah.
I still think long term he's a better second baseman. I think,
do too. I don't disregard that. I'm just saying,
totally.
I think just getting him up, getting his reps,
yeah.
would be
beneficial.
And you
can see his value at shortstop as well right now. Galvis has obviously locked down that position this year. I think that with Tatis, you know, being a young guy, he's still been in the minors for a couple years, and he seemed primed and ready this year, which was shocking. I mean, there's obviously some
really
not
early.
Holes in his game, but I mean, he's the reason that he is the number two prospect in baseball is because he's very flourished, not just for his age, but as a major league player. And I think that, you know, the talks of him playing third base have kind of dwindled out because he has such good range and such a good arm from the shortstop position. But Urias obviously being another person that they can bring up.
Mm-hmm. And I think I was talking to my brother Enrique on the drive over. Honestly, he's a five-tool player. I mean, I know you look at Vlad Guerrero Jr. as the number one prospect in all of baseball, but Vlad can't steal bases.
No.
And Tatis can.
Yeah, and there's questions about Vlad's glove as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I think Vlad's probably the best bat coming up through the minors, but you look at Tatis, he can do it all.
Yeah.
And his numbers are still pretty good after that ice-cold start the year.
Very similar to Carlos Correa coming with the Astros.
Yeah, he's almost got 20 home runs. He's batting close to 300. I think he's at like 280. It's unfortunate. He had a home run in the same game that he got hurt in. So,
he's 19 years old. Like, the guy's still growing.
And
so,
he's 19 years old. That's insane.
That's the part that blows my mind, is we're looking at a player that's 19, the number two overall prospect. And, I mean, you've seen it before, Bryce Harper, Carlos Correa, these players that have, you know, I mean, he's obviously not from the United States, but coming over and making impact right away in their farm system is just unbelievable. So he's got plenty of room to not just get healthy, but to get better.
You've heard Preller say that Tatis and Gore are hands off. Like, they're not willing to deal those two. They're willing. All the other pieces are, you know, expendable for the right player. But those two, they've mentioned that they're untouchable at this point. So I mean, I look at Tatis going forward. It gives Padre fans some hope, which is something we really need, honestly. I mean, you
hope.
Look at you need some
hope,
man.
We need
hope,
more than that.
Every year we see these top prospects come up. They're doing really well in the minors. They come up through the majors. I think we talked about it last week. Maybe the development's not there in the major league level. I think definitely you look at how well these players have done in the minors, and somebody like Tatis, he just gives you hope, especially at a young age.
Well, and hope that he comes out of this injury and
yeah.
it doesn't.
Yeah,
know, it doesn't
seems like the injury, like, he'll be able to recover
yeah.
from that. And, I mean, we're not in – the Padres are not in contention for a couple years. So
totally.
There's no rush to, like, get him back. Like, we need him right now.
No, you
so, want to
let him heal.
Exactly, yeah. You can let him – work through this injury. You can let him heal, get his reps back, and bring him up in a timely fashion. But speaking of the Padres, you know, the MLB deadline is coming up next week. There's been rumors that they're going after Syndergaard. They're going after Chris Archer. Do you guys think that they should make a move for these guys, or what are you thinking?
I'm questionable. I don't think that I would be upset about it. The only concern that I have is that if they're feeling a need to move up or move to get a player like Archer or Syndergaard, who, by the way, aren't the number one pitchers on their teams, it makes me feel like they're not as confident with their pitching prospects as they hoped. Not to take anything away from Mackenzie Gore or Ryan Weathers, the guy that we just drafted, who obviously we haven't seen a whole lot of yet.
We just signed to
Quantrill.
But maybe there's not as much, you know, hope there with some of the players like Baez or maybe Quintrall. You know, it makes me think that they might be questioning the development of some of those prospects coming up. So if that's the case, then by all means, if you feel like you're going to have another starter as a centerpiece to that going forward, then absolutely move for him. But it just makes me think maybe they're questioning some of the development of these players in the minors.
I mean, me personally, I don't know if it's so much, you know, a lack of confidence in these young guys coming up. I think it's more along the lines of they want someone who's been there, done that, who can show these young guys the ropes on how to get it done in the big league. So, I mean, it's like what we were just talking about. You know, some of these guys, they're doing really well in the minors. They come up. They don't do quite as well in the majors, even though they've been killing it in the minors. And so sometimes you just need somebody who's established, who can take a little bit of the heat off the young guys coming up who have a lot of expectations on them, especially for, you know, a fan base like the Padres who are starved for a contender.
My only thought with that is that's what free agency is for. You go after players in free agency like we did with Hosmer. And there's still going to be some pitchers coming off this free agency that you can bring in and help develop some of these younger players to get more, you know, a better visual of what it's like to be in a major league system. It just, and not to take anything away from what you're saying, but I just think that there's more to it if you're willing to give up the prospects to go after the player. That just, it makes me think that maybe some of those lower level prospects aren't doing as well as we think. So maybe we'll see their names come off the board, but that might not be a pitcher that we see in 5 years from now being an all-star.
I personally think it's not so much about, I think the Padres definitely have a lot of money tied up in players that aren't playing for the team right now. You look at them, they're committing $12.5 million to Travis Wood. They're committing, I think, another 20 or so to James Shields, who they still are paying for. That's how they were able to get Tatis. So most of their money...
So we're paying $20 million for Tatis. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. So most of the money they're paying for is, you know, is for players that aren't playing for them. And so I don't know if they have a lot of money that they can spend on their active major league roster at this time. For someone like Syndergaard, they can give up some young controllable assets to get another one who's established like a Syndergaard who's they have control over for the next 3 years. So, I mean, I personally would not be opposed to a trade. However, I do question the timeline. I wish they would have actually maybe done this move in the off season, maybe as opposed to signing someone like Hosmer in a position that we already had shored up going into the season with Will Myers, and they even have Josh Naylor in the minors as an insurance option.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things is, like, we've been so, like, as Padres fans, they've been telling us we're building in our farm system. Like, this is trust the process. This is what's happening. And now we're hearing, oh, we're going to let go of, you know, possibly big-name prospects that we have. And, you know, you're kind of questioning whether or not were we doing the right thing? Like,
totally, yeah. And that's kind of what on the same page that I'm at. I don't disregard some of their higher name prospects that they've been developing. And maybe if they're looking at getting rid of a possible Naylor, you know, since we're already pretty loaded at first base, I wouldn't be opposed to that transaction. You know, giving up a top prospect for a pitcher. It really would just depend on the deal. Chris Archer, I know we discussed at the beginning of the year with possibly being involved in that Hunter Renfroe trade. And Chris Archer has underperformed again. I mean, he's been an all-star once in his career. Syndergaard, I feel like, would have a little bit more value. But again, we're talking about players that aren't even the best pitching options on their current teams. So again, I wouldn't look to give up too much of our prospects, because like you know, Enrique is saying, it's been trust the process, and we want to see that process in its full effect.
Right.
If it worked, and that's how you see the value of the executive positions, if they're doing their jobs on these players.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like the Mets are definitely in a vulnerable position at this point to deal Syndergaard, because you know you have Cespedes that went out with a heel injury, just inked a huge contract, so. You know, I feel like the Mets need to do something to help out their ball club. I also think the Padres, they have a huge logjam out in the outfield, which we've mentioned several times. So if it is a position player that we're going to move, I don't really agree with moving one of the prospects, you know, one of the top 50 prospects. I don't think we should move one of those top prospects in order to trade for a big arm.
Yeah, I think that clearing up some of that outfield is a very good point. We had talked today about possibly, you know, the Jankowski move, and he's been huge for our team. You know, Brandon and I were discussing how he's a great number four outfielder on a contending team.
Well, he's been our best leadoff hitter.
No, absolutely. And I think that if a team sees value in that, I don't think that the Mets necessarily would be interested in that trade per se. But I think that a team, you know, in contention that has a starting pitcher, a veteran starting pitcher on their team that they're, you know, willing to get rid of.
Right.
The problem is teams in contention right now aren't looking to give up starting pitchers. That most of them are trying to add starting pitchers. So the deals look a little bit confusing to me. I like Dean was saying, I hope that they don't give up any prospects for a player when we have all this young pitching prospect.
And I'm in total agreement. Obviously, I don't want to sell on the farm for someone who's – I think it's beneficial to obviously to trade for someone who's going to help show the young guys how to get it done. And I think having that proven guy, I think they're thinking – Clayton Richards, that guy, but I'm not entirely sure if he's really established enough to.
Nope.
You know,
I would say Tyson Ross before.
I would say Tyson Ross, and I think that he's a guy that's been there longer, and he's been around the league as well. So I don't think that there's a huge need for that. And like Brandon was saying last week, I mean, we have one of the most tenured pitching coaches in baseball, and I think that if they have faith in him, that you know. When we start bringing around some of these younger arms, and we've brought up a lot of you know prospects this year. I mean, Lucchesi, he's you know a little inconsistent, but I've liked what I've seen from him for the most part.
He's definitely
he's our best pitcher.
Yeah,
right now.
Totally. Yeah. And then also we lost. I'm sorry, blanking on his
Brad
name.
Hand.
No, not the starting pitcher. He went out with an injury.
Oh, Denelson Lamet.
Lamet, yeah, and I mean that was obviously a huge loss, but. You know, we've been bringing up some of these younger guys, so I feel like if we have enough faith in, you know, Darren Balsley, and we'll be able to, you know, flourish with our younger prospects.
All right, last week at the trade deadline, big names, any teams you could see being moved? Brandon, who you got?
I mean, we did see the Red Sox just dealt for, I'm drawing a blank on his name, one of the starters.
Nope, you're looking at the wrong guy.
Well, anyways,
I didn't see anyone.
They just traded for someone earlier, I want to say it was a couple days ago. I mean, I look at a team like the Red Sox who have the Yankees nipping at their heels. They're one of those teams that needs to shore up that bullpen. And I know they've inquired about Kirby Yates and Craig Stammen. I wouldn't mind, you know, they've shown a track record of making deals with the Padres. I know their closer, Craig Kimbrel, came from the Padres. They also traded Drew Pomeranz. I could see them swinging a deal for those two. I don't know. They don't have that many prospects, which is the only question that I have about them.
Yeah, who could we get for it? I think somebody that a couple people that come to mind when I think about potential trade suitors. I mean, the Phillies are looking, you know, to be at the top of that division, and they need to last the rest of the season. I think a player like Mike Moustakas coming out of Kansas City, you know, adding a bat to that lineup, or a player like Adam Jones, who's been reported, you know, the Orioles trying to clear house, get rid of as many people as they can. And the Phillies do have prospects to give up. Again, it's one of those, depending on the situation they feel like they're in, if they're, you know, top of the division right now, and that's where they think they're going to be, you know, go out there and add those bats, because the National League is going to be a power hitting circus this coming October, you know, with the Dodgers, addition of Manny Machado, with that lineup already being as powerful as it is.
Yeah, I mean, my team, or obviously you said the Braves need to go after Mike Moustakas for the Phillies need to go after third baseman. I was in line with you, Brandon, that, you know, the biggest team that needs to make a move is the Red Sox if they're going to take on my Yankees into the postseason. I think they need to fill that second base slot. I think Brian Dozier fills that spot. I think they can make a move for him. Dustin Pedroia, you know, he's getting old. I don't know if he's really going to make it through the rest of the season. Or, yeah, he might be hurt.
I think he's hurt.
He might be hurt.
I mean, are the Twins willing to deal him is a big question, because I know I think they still have hopes that they're going to still contend for that division, even though I think that's the most sure bet. You know,
all of baseball right now.
Yeah, Indians are going to win it, but are they willing to, you know, swallow their pride and flip the switch?
Well, I mean, next week we're definitely going to go over a huge review of the trade deadline, winners, losers, who we think should have been traded, who we think didn't need to make a necessary move. So, you know, next week, tune in. We're definitely going to go over that. I mean, let's just cover NBA real quick. I know it's light. I know we're kind of moving past that season. It's an off season. Dirk got that signed that 1 year deal.
Team friendly move.
I just think you didn't need to overstep Kobe on that. You know?
I mean, with Dirk, I have the utmost respect for that guy. And I know we discussed this on a previous podcast. I mean, his championship win over the Miami Heat is just looking like one of the best championship performances in all of NBA history now. And he's constantly going after small deals so the Mavericks can add additional star power to that team. I think with having him on your team, it's the face of that franchise. No matter, you know, when he decides to retire, he decides to retire. But I think with them bringing him back on these one-year deals and letting him decide when he wants to go, I mean, great for them. Great for the Mavericks and great for their fans.
I mean, I was listening to, you know, Mark Cuban talk, and honestly, the definition of team player is, you know, is Dirk Nowitzki. And so I know he's actually had discussions with Mark Cuban, who's the owner of the Mavericks. And he's basically got an open checkbook where he's like, whatever you want, if you want a job after your career's over playing, you know, you can have a job in our front office. You can have whatever you want, honestly. So he's kind of got that carte blanche, you know, opportunity with the Mavericks. And
well-deserved. I mean,
and he deserves it. Yeah. And honestly, and he took a pay cut because they wanted to sign DeAndre Jordan, obviously a former Clipper, one of my favorite players, watching him play. Honestly, you know, I'm glad that Dirk's signing with the Mavericks, and obviously it's going to be a nice homecoming for him, coming back to him.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, it does suck that Vince Carter had a raid on his parade also by
Vince Carter, man,
signing a 1 year contract with the Atlanta Hawks. So he is also in his 21st season. Yeah. So
the funny stat about that I was reading is that he was drafted, you know, some odd years ago, 21 years ago. No, whatever it was. Trae Young was 3 months old.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Who was their number one draft pick this year?
Yep.
Right. So the guy that, you know, has been in the league since this guy was, you know, still in diapers. I mean, that just goes to show, I mean, not just the longevity of the career, but the great luck that he's had. And I mean, the poor guy, I mean, he's never been able to win a title, but he's been able to play for all these different franchises. Yeah.
I mean, me personally, I was really hoping he'd sign with the Warriors, because I'd love to see him get a title for once.
That'd be the one player that signed with the Warriors
that I'd be happy.
A superstar that I'm like, you're not joining that super team.
We don't even remember. I mean, not that we don't remember him as a superstar, but he's not a superstar in this league anymore. But in his prime, he was one of the best. I mean, his dunk competition,
the 360 dunk,
is insane.
That was vicious.
He'll go down as one is if not the best dunk. I mean, Jordan's obviously.
People are trying to emulate that.
I think you saw that last year. Donovan Mitchell dressed up as him. He wore the Raptors jersey, even though he's never played for the Raptors his rookie year. He's playing for the Jazz. Everybody wants to be Vince Carter, especially in the dunk contest. He's got one of the most memorable dunks.
Yeah, he's got that mystique to him. But back to Dirk, I think that, you know, I don't see the Mavericks necessarily contending, obviously. So it's really just like having a player kind of like
fans in the stands.
Yeah, he's going to be coaching those younger players, kind of getting them for that next chapter of the Mavericks basketball team. So
And who knows, maybe priming him for a potential coaching position.
Right, yeah, like definitely. Definitely.
Obviously him, you know, taking Doncic under his wing, both European players, obviously I think that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Doncic, they traded up for number 3 overall to get Doncic with the Atlanta Hawks, and obviously I think that's just a big move for that franchise moving forward.
Carmelo Anthony, was also, there's rumors that he was going to sign with the Rockets. I know there was that news conference where he said he's not going to come off the bench. He kind of laughed at that statement. just take it away, right? Just go.
I just have a question for the three of you, is when was the last time Carmelo Anthony was relevant in the NBA?
Oh.
Oh, I thought you were going to say in basketball. I was going to be back in the NCAA tournament.
I need to ask one of the old guys over here, a.k.a. me.
I mean when you look at a player that, I mean, statistically, a Hall of Famer. Never been a team player, you know.
Right.
Got out of Denver, went to the Knicks, was never able to get into an Eastern Conference Finals. And they've surrounded him with good players. You know, then he goes on to a Thunder team where he's making the same comments, like, I'm not taking a bench role. He's not LeBron James. He's a phenomenal shooter. Don't get me wrong. He's still one of the best pure shooters in basketball. And, you know, reaching that, you know, past prime of your career is a perfect time to say, I need to take less minutes and shoot the ball more. And I, for the life of me, can't understand why he's not willing to take a backseat role on a contending team.
Mm-hmm. I definitely totally agree with you. I mean, coming out of the same draft as LeBron, I think the expectation was that, you know, he's going to keep up with him. And honestly, they're really close friends. And so you look at him and you think, he's obviously had the success offensively. I look at him as a very lazy player. I would not want him on my team.
You look at his shape as he has been. I mean, the dude does not look like a basketball player
anymore.
Oh,
he looks like a basketball.
He looks sloppy.
He's obviously, he's very skilled offensively. He can shoot the ball, and I mean, he's an ISO player, so he's going to do really well for himself. He's going to put up good numbers, but when was the last time he put up winning numbers? I mean, on the Thunder, that team was loaded with talent, and yet they get bounced in the first round by the Utah Jazz. I mean,
there goes a lot in saying that. I mean, he was drafted in the same draft as LeBron James, as well as Dwayne Wade.
Expectations.
And Chris Bosh. And the players that came out of that, I mean, Chris Bosh, obviously, he wasn't the player we thought he was when he left Toronto, but Dwayne Wade leading Miami to a championship before LeBron James ever showed up. I mean, Carmelo Anthony never even made it there, and he's not a winning basketball player. He is a phenomenal shooter. Again, I think he's a Hall of Famer statistically. Never been a good team player. And aside from that, the Rockets already have a pure isolation player in James Harden who takes over the ball. Right. I mean, nobody's going to give respect to Carmelo Anthony on the floor with James Harden. I mean –
And yeah, they got ISO Joe on that team, too.
Like you said, yeah, you know, like a player that's drafted so highly in that 2003 draft that was loaded with LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, like you said. You know, he was drafted after, you know, Donnie Darko, Darko Milicic, who just
probably in some farm
just
out in,
disappeared. Yeah. But, you know, a player like that doesn't show that kind of effort, like James, like Bosh, like Wade.
He doesn't deserve a starting role.
He doesn't deserve that starting role. He hasn't put that time in. I will say he's a natural shooter, but at the same time, you know, a guy like that, he needs to take a backseat role.
He does.
I mean, he's a name. They would get him for cheap. So that right there is kind of like enticing. But at the same time, your game plan in the, especially the West, is to beat Golden State. Golden State, who's going to throw points down like no other.
They probably shouldn't lose a game this year. You know they will, but they should with their lineup.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
And their bench.
I think
LeBron James.
Cousins
going to
miss like the first half of the season. They're saying they may not even start him for the regular season. But totally agree. I think that team's taken a huge step back. I looked at the Rockets when they dropped Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals to the Warriors. That was detrimental to that team. That killed that team.
And
that crippled them.
I did not see them winning that game. I mean, Chris Paul has been a phenomenal point guard. He'll go down as one of the best point guards to ever play the game.
Who didn't you see winning the game, the Warriors or the Rockets?
The Rockets, because Chris Paul's not there, and that's the same player that he's been his entire career. And, I mean, the value's there in the player. But at the same time, if the goal is to win titles, you know, you have Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony on your team. And James Harden's the only one of those players that's ever played in a finals before. And we saw how that ended.
Yeah.
Not well.
Right. Just moving forward, I want to talk about that 2003 draft class. You know, Dwayne Wade got offered that 3-year deal from a Chinese league for $25 million. I know we're going to get into NFL for a long stretch, so let's just move right past that into the NFL.
Absolutely. Congratulations, Dwayne Wade. But yeah,
congratulations.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to take it. I think it's just it's nice that he got the offer. But
Grant, just to add on that, it's like I mean there are very few like we hear a lot about like players that did well in college that didn't make the draft, didn't do or had small stints in the NBA and then made their way to China. Or European League or whatever. But I mean, if we look at Dwayne Wade, he endorses a shoe and athletic company, Ning,
whatever,
something
yeah,
like that. He's been doing it since 2012. Here he could have taken a large Adidas or Nike contract. So, I mean, he has a presence in China for a handful of years. So, I mean, it's there. I don't necessarily see. I mean, he's married to Gabrielle Union, who's celebrity. So I don't – and he has 3 children. So I don't necessarily – I don't know how that's going to play out in China. I know that Miami Heat have offered him $5.3 million to stay there. So I don't – it'll be interesting to see what he does.
Yeah, well, like you said, I mean – that's just a smart business move, though. You know, you see a huge market for yourself. You go after a shoe deal that's big in the
and he spends
biggest
the summers there.
The biggest,
right.
The biggest population in the world,
right.
In China. So you go after that shoe deal, but
and they've been trying for a long time to get into that, you know, field for basketball as well. Find new prospects, just like the baseball has been doing in the Dominican Republic for years now.
But like we said, like NFL's coming up. I know. You know, Enrique, our guest, is huge into NFL. He's a big Chargers fan still.
Chargers!
Finally get to talk some football.
No,
Chargers.
No idea why a San Diego resident would still be a Chargers fan.
We said that we wouldn't do that on here.
Anyway, all right, I'm sorry.
We said we wouldn't do that.
I'm sorry, I take it back.
I think me and Dean are on the same page.
Anyways, Chargers aren't necessarily on the menu today.
But, yeah, like we said, let's just we have this consistent, you know, roundtable thing going on. Let's just bring up the question, who is the top rookie quarterback? There was a lot of rookie quarterbacks drafted this season. Ryan, who you got?
I mean, it's a tough call. You have to go with not just the best player, but the best situation. Lots of quarterbacks on this list, obviously, who were drafted in the first round. You have Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, and Lamar Jackson. I think that the quarterback with the best situation would probably have to be Josh Rosen. He's got, you know, a solidified receiver in Larry Fitzgerald. He's got David Johnson in the backfield, who's somebody that you can hand the ball off to. Coming off an injury, but it's a hand injury, so he shouldn't miss a step there. The player that I'm most excited to watch, though, is Lamar Jackson. He's a player that I thought was very underrated as a thrower coming out in the draft. And I know Dean and I had spoken about it quite a bit. His numbers constantly increased in college, and you saw his completion percentage go up, you saw his passing yards, touchdowns, and his interception ratio go down. I think when you look at a player like Joe Flacco, kind of on the downhill of his career as of late, you know, if he misses a step, I mean, Lamar Jackson's going to be right in there. But like I said, several quarterbacks in there. I think Josh Rosen with the best situation right now. But I think Lamar Jackson down the road would be the most exciting.
I definitely agree with you with the Lamar Jackson point because, you know, in his college career, he obviously in his freshman season won that Heisman Trophy.
Absolutely.
And I definitely think that he could have won a second time to, you know,
he deserved it.
He definitely deserved it. He
statistically,
wasn't flashy,
he deserved it.
But Enrique, who do you think is that best rookie quarterback?
I mean, I'm going to take a completely different opposite direction, but I'm going to go with Baker Mayfield.
I know
a lot of people are going to go, Johnny Manziel 2.0?
Why did we invite him on the show?
No, exactly. I just feel like he's in a position. I mean, the Browns, I'm one of those people that have definitely rooted for the Browns for a handful of years. I keep on saying, like, similar to the Jags, this is going to be their year. This is their year that they're going to turn it around. I mean, they're in a difficult division. I mean, with the Steelers, the Bengals, and the Ravens. But I feel he's in a position – he's not necessarily going to get thrown out to the Wolves. He's got he's behind a quarterback that has been there for – he's been in the league. He's not like the greatest quarterback ever. But, I mean, he's going to do the job, get it done. He's going to – in Tyrod Taylor. And, you know, I don't see Baker Mayfield playing this year. I see him playing maybe next year or whatnot. But – at the same token, I just feel like it's really difficult to just get thrown out to the Wolves.
For Browns fans, I hope he does well, but yeah.
I got to agree with my brother here. I was going to take Baker Mayfield, not necessarily for the reasons that you think. I think being from a team like the Cleveland Browns who have that history of, you know, failure – you look at a team like that, they have failed consistently. And I just look at someone like Baker Mayfield, maybe the pressure's a little bit off because the expectation is to fail at this point. And you look at some of their receivers. I just saw a report that they might go after Dez Bryant. So you look at a wide receiver corp of Dez Bryant, Corey Coleman, Josh Gordon,
Jarvis Landry.
And
I don't know if Coleman's going to touch the field this year because of that.
And they have Carlos Hyde now, don't they?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that looks like a pretty good set of offensive skill players surrounding him. So maybe he might do well. The expectations are as low as possible.
Go ahead, Dean, take this.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was on the same field. I was going to pick Baker Mayfield as well. Just solely on
Jumping on the fact,
coming into the draft, I was not a Baker Mayfield fan. I did not think he was going to get it done. I thought a lot of people compared him to Drew Brees because of his size.
Right.
And I didn't think that, you know, there's one guy that can do that job, and it's Drew Brees.
Right.
You know, you
exactly.
compare a guy to Drew Brees because he's Drew Brees, and that's it.
And Drew Brees was not a number one overall pick. He was a second round draft pick.
Exactly. And I didn't think that Mayfield was going to get the job done. But I do think that Tyrod Taylor isn't going to get the job done. I think that he is going to, you know, he's going to have hiccups. The crowd is going to be wanting that, 22nd starting QB in 10 years or whatever it is. And, you know, them signing, you know, Jarvis Landry, Josh Gordon's coming back. Corey Coleman stepped up huge that season that he was the number one wide receiver. If they do get Dez Bryant, I think that Baker Mayfield's an easy selection. But if they don't, Josh Rosen is definitely my guy because, like you said, Ryan, I think that in college he was the most NFL-ready quarterback.
Yeah. I'm not taking anything away from Baker Mayfield. I don't think that he gets the credit he deserves. He's a player that was not offered a Division I scholarship. He had to walk on at Texas A&M, transferred to Oklahoma, earned his starting position, earned his role, and he's got that chip on his shoulder, for sure. He's got that chip on his shoulder. The only reason that I'm hating on your guys' pick a little bit here is because of the situation of the Browns' offense and the overall place that team is in.
Uh-huh.
You know, they have Myles Garrett, who they drafted number one overall last year, who, you know, sits out, plays, doesn't give 100% effort.
Yeah, he's not proven.
Corey Coleman, again, a first-round draft pick. And I just think from a standpoint of the number one overall pick, there is an expectation. There is pressure because you're the number one overall pick. If he was the number four overall pick, we're looking at a different story. But since there's five other names on this list that we're looking at, there's a ton of pressure for him to succeed. Maybe not this year, but down the road. And the Browns need a quarterback to succeed.
Right. Definitely. And, I mean, they haven't had one in how many years?
In my lifetime, Tim Couch was their best quarterback.
Right,
and
exactly.
He was not a good quarterback.
And then since then, we've had the Browns have had whatever, how many quarterbacks. But, I mean,
we've all seen the jersey with the names all attached to it.
It comes down to there's a lot of personality on the team. They're hoping that Josh Gordon, who is one of the best receivers when not high or under the influence, is playing well. So, you know, that is one thing that we're looking to see. Granted, there's a couple other quarterbacks on this list. Josh Allen, who, you know, I was never a big Josh Allen fan, you know, and I see his position in Buffalo, and I don't think that he's set up to succeed.
No, I would agree with that. Josh Allen's a player that I just think that it's another Blaine Gabbert, another Ryan Tannehill. Like, he's got all the – on paper, he looks good.
Right.
On the field, you know, he played for the Mountain West, so it's not like he's one of the superstar defenses. I just – like, and like I was saying, Baker Mayfield, outstanding player. I mean, he's a person that – he doesn't have the best arm. He doesn't have the best legs. But he's a gamer, and he goes out there and he gives 100% all the time. I just think if we're talking about who's going to be the best rookie out of this class, you know, Josh Rosen definitely being in the best situation, Lamar Jackson being the most exciting. I think that there's a ton of pressure on Baker Mayfield, not just from an organization, but from the fans, because they have not drafted a number one overall pick as a quarterback in years.
Well, they just want the answer, you know.
That's the comment that I was just making, is that there was, you know, five other quarterbacks here that they could have taken, and so if he doesn't hit, again, we're looking at the Browns being terrible for another decade.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of other NFL news. Todd Gurley. Well, we talked about Le'Veon Bell not getting his deal last week, and then, you know, Todd Gurley comes out, he gets his 4-year extension for $60 million. $45 million of that is guaranteed. That is just unbelievable for, you know, a running back's standard. You know,
going into his fourth year as well. I mean, it's a lot of money.
You section off each position to get a certain amount. You know, you allot a certain threshold for how much each position will make. And I think Todd Gurley just busted that ceiling on the running back standard.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that he's
going to
set the bar for players like David Johnson. I think it's going to show that, you know, with Melvin Gordon with the LA Chargers, that his values, it's obviously going to set his bar not as high, not putting up the same production as Todd Gurley. But Todd Gurley's earned his money, and he's 23 years old as of right now. He'll be 24 when the season starts. The deal's for 4 years, so it's going to pay him huge before he's even 30 years old. And I think locking him up long-term, being in Los Angeles, my only issue with the high spending is they also just signed Brandon Cooks to one of the most lucrative deals, and he hasn't even stepped on the field as a Ram yet. And they're throwing a lot of money at people. You know, they have obviously just the one-year deal with Ndamukong Suh. They have Marcus Peters locked up for a little while with that trade. They have Aqib Talib for the next 2 years. And I know there's contract opt-in and outs there. They still haven't paid Aaron Darnold.
I know.
And I think that he is the centerpiece of that team. And if I'm him, I'm sitting there pissed off as wondering why all these dudes are getting these huge contracts with all this guaranteed money. And he, you know, held out some of last year to get his contract. Still not getting it.
Each agent is different, so the talks with each, you know, organization is different. I definitely think the Rams are spending money to make money in the sense of...
Well, they're in Los Angeles now, and they feel like they need to win that crowd over. I mean, it's still dominantly in, soon-to-be Las Vegas Raider territory, and I just... Not questioning Gurley. I mean, he deserves the money for sure, but questioning why they're not putting more value at their overall best player position. Coming into terms as well with Jared Goff, next year is going to be up for contract as well. It seems like they're spending, you know, we have that salary cap in the NFL that's a hard cap, and it looks like they're overspending with some of their value.
I personally like the move. I think it's a really good move for the.
I said I liked it though.
I know you did. I personally look at, you know, like a sport like basketball where, you know, showing your players that you really value them on your team. I think showing that level of commitment to Todd Gurley, extending his contract, adding those a lot of guaranteed money on that contract. I look at something like that, especially when you look at a team like the Steelers, who aren't committing to Le'Veon Bell, who's demanding just this sky high dollar amount. I just look at making a move and extending Todd Gurley when you do. I think it's a good image for your team. It shows your players that you're willing to commit, even though I know you'd mentioned You know, Aaron Donaldson's obviously hasn't gotten the contract that he's looking for, but honestly, Todd Gurley's a more marketable face, personally.
No, he definitely is, and I see the value.
And he's
going
to put fans in the stands.
Absolutely. I just think that, you know, with being in a conference where you're playing Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs and, you know, getting stomped out by the Falcons last year, you know, they've put a lot of new faces on that defense. And, again, not taking anything away from Gurley's deal. He's been not just explosive in the run game, but in the pass game. Phenomenal blocking running back. He's, you know, paved the way for Jared Goff to be, you know, as play as well as he did last year. You know, just you look at teams that spend a lot of money and don't hold out longer, in a couple years they always come back to regret that. It's the same reason the Patriots formula has worked for as long as it has.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I agree with both of you. And one of the big issues with a lot of people are making this Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell. The Rams offense runs through Todd Gurley. I mean, as well as Jared Goff played last year, I mean, he was thrown to Robert Woods and whoever
That's another guy that got locked up long-term with big money.
But, I mean, on the opposite side of the ball, Aaron Donald, the defense runs through him. Yeah. And so there is concerns in terms of, like, they need to lock him up. And I know, you know, I'm sure they'll work out a deal, and we'll see what happens with that. But in terms with the Rams, I feel like that was a really good deal. And people keep making this Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley comparison. You know, a couple years back, when Le'Veon Bell was suspended four games for marijuana use, D'Angelo Williams, he stacked up numbers for them. And and so, you know, I'm not necessarily sure that, you know, as well as Le'Veon Bell has played, you know, it might be a system thing. You know, numbers have proven, you know, when Todd Gurley is not playing, how horrible they are when he's not in that position. So, you know, I think the money is well spent on the Rams for Todd Gurley. He hasn't been injury prone, so that's definitely been a positive. And moving forward, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out for the rest of the running backs. You know, I know Le'Veon Bell at the end of the year, he's probably going to find a different team, and interesting to see what you guys' take would be on who he might go to. But
we talked a little bit about that last week. I think Dean and I are both in the same area where the Texans might be a team that would look to sign him, fit in well with that offense.
Right.
Again, I see the value with Gurley. He is obviously Jared Goff's the quarterback, but he's the centerpiece of that offense.
Right.
I just think the contracts of Brandon Cooks, again, a player who
hasn't
stepped on the field yet, those are the kind of contracts that you look at in question, because, you know, Donald's sitting right there waiting for his contract, and this guy's never stepped on the field before, and he's getting paid big money. So they're definitely going after the sexy players, like putting fans in the stands. But again, it's the same reason that the Patriots have been as good as they have for such a long time, is they value each position the same.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, you know, running backs need to start to get paid, because you look at what makes a good quarterback is what kind of running back they have behind them. And
it's the same reason the left tackle is the second highest paid player on your team, because, you know, it all trickles down.
Or, like, you look at, like, a team like the Falcons, right, who
I think with Matt Ryan, you know, you see – value there from a franchise position. But with Julio Jones, he's been the biggest reason Matt Ryan's had as much success as
he has.
And I think that with him now sitting as the number 9 highest paid receiver in the league, I know that they've been in talks this week about getting that contract done next year. I don't foresee them letting him walk by any means, but the guy's deserving of the money, because like Todd Gurley, definitely, that offense is centered by what Julio Jones is doing.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I mean, I personally, Matt Ryan, obviously, if you're in that situation where you're contending, you have a chance to win a Super Bowl, you have to lock up your quarterback. And do you really want to pull the plug on a build that you've been contributing to for several years? You want to pull the plug on it because you don't want to pay your quarterback? Obviously, I think you have to pay the quarterback. And I think that's where that was the situation they were in.
Yeah, I definitely think that, you know, with you know, this Todd Gurley signing of resetting the market for running backs. You look at how important a quarterback is, like I mentioned, and with this Julio Jones holding out, if he doesn't get his contract, will definitely show that you need to sign the appropriate people to keep certain people happy. And I think that Julio Jones deserves his contract, because you look at a team like the Falcons who don't have a deep they have a deep running back core, but they don't have one standalone guy, and I think Julio Jones is more deserving of that big contract than one of these Devontae Freeman.
And Devontae Freeman, they didn't give a huge contract to. I mean, they re-signed him this past season, but it wasn't a super lucrative deal. And I think that, like you're saying, that's exactly the reason, because they know that offense runs through Julio Jones. I think when you talk about Gurley and you talk about Julio Jones and them setting the bar for their position, I think with running backs, you're going to look at it now as more of a tier one, tier two running back as well, because you're going to have people like Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley, and David Johnson, who are the tier one running back who not just provide explosive offense in the run game, but also in the pass game. Those are going to be the guys that you have to pay not just the $5 to $6 million range to, but that $12 to $15 million range to, because they provide so much more to your offense. And so I think you're going to start to see that start to develop in the next couple of years here with that tier one, tier two. You look at a player like Leonard Fournette, obviously just coming off his rookie year, but I don't think he has the same value as Todd Gurley or Le'Veon Bell, because he's a bruising running back, and those have been known to not last as long.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it'll be interesting what happens coming up in NFL. But this weekend was PGA, the Open. Watching Tiger just blow that, he had the clear lead. He was, down or seven strokes off par, and just to see him double bogey, then try to climb back with a couple, try to come back from that terrible stint that he had.
Yeah, the double bogey and the bogey. It was rough to watch. I mean, I know the two of you, Brandon, Enrique, probably not watching too much golf. So Tiger Woods, though, I mean, I grew up watching golf with my grandpa, and he brings a different level of excitement, not just with his play, but, I mean, it turns the whole field more exciting. But credit to where credit's deserved. Molinari didn't bogey a single hole that entire tournament, and he showed consistency, and he was playing along with Tiger in that final round, and he just got the job done. And when Tiger, went three shots back on the lead, I mean, he just kept it consistent, kept it rolling. So congratulations to him. Hopefully this is a good sign with Tiger Woods playing better. You've seen him, not just come in, fifth or sixth place this week, but he came in second place a few weeks ago. He's exciting to watch again. I mean, he's 42 years old, and he's still going out there and smacking the ball around harder than anybody in the field.
I mean, me personally, I love seeing Tiger's name back in golf. Obviously, it's a huge thing for the sport. And I mean, me personally, I remember my fourth grade teacher, who was black, and he used to golf a lot, and he loved Tiger Woods. I remember he used to have pictures of him up in his up in the classroom, and he would let us do a little bit of miniature golf in the class, and I feel like I have a really, really fond memories of, Tiger Woods play. It brings me back to my childhood.
Yeah. Tiger Woods is golf, in my opinion. I mean, he's been around since he was 18 years old, winning tournaments, and to see him back in the field, not just playing, but contending, it's so good for the game of golf.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
It makes it exciting. Yeah.
Without a doubt. I mean, he is definitely a character, and he reaches out to all kinds of different people that not necessarily follow. I personally don't follow golf, but Tiger Woods is a name that I follow. I know they're trying to push out different names. You hear the Rorys and you hear the Jordan Spieths, and they have done well. But when you hear Tiger's name,
it just draws you to the
sport. It draws my attention. And I mean, until I stop hearing that name, I'll dip in to golf here and there. It's a bummer to hear that he blew such a lead, but at the same time, like, you know, we might have this one last swan song per se for him, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, with Tiger Woods, I mean, being the face of golf for as long as he was, and, you know, taking the few years off to recover from a back injury, I mean, that was no joke of an injury. I mean, the back, I mean, it's constantly twisting around during the sport of golf, and to come back as well as he has is phenomenal. I don't think anybody has been able to take over what he was able to do in the prime of his career. And you, like you're mentioning with Rory McIlroy's and the Jordan Spieths and the Dustin Johnsons, there's been a hole missing ever since Tiger was gone, and nobody's been able to step in and fill that. Maybe it's good to see the competition, but Tiger Woods is the face of golf because how much he dominated in the prime of his career.
Yeah, I definitely think that the younger generation needs a Tiger or a Phil Mickelson to kind of get them involved back into golf.
Show love to Vijay Singh too, great golfer.
Yeah, but you know, wrapping up, I always like to talk a little bit of NHL. I know you guys aren't huge fans, but the Canucks had an amicable split with their president of hockey operations, Trevor Linden. He was a huge Canucks player. You know, during his time in the 90s, he was called Captain Canuck. He was one of the youngest captains at the time in NHL. He was the first Canuck to score 300 goals. Obviously, you know, he was beat out, but he still holds to this day he's in the top three for every Canuck record. Obviously, he's beat out by either Sedin twin just because they're fucking amazing. But Brandon, yeah, you got a big sneeze coming up?
I'm just getting allergies for some reason.
All right, he's just getting all excited about Canuck talk.
Yeah. Just hating on my Canucks, huh?
I'm not hating on the Canucks.
He's tearing, up.
I will say I did retweet a picture of the new Ducks jerseys, and I'm pretty excited. I think this year I'm going to start watching. It's a 25th anniversary.
Charlie Conway.
Yep. It's I haven't seen jerseys this good since the Bash Brothers were taking it to Team Iceland in the Winter Olympics. So yeah, you might catch me talking a little Ducks hockey later on.
All right, yeah, well, you know, I always like trashing the Ducks, you know, chirping at them a little bit because they're trash. But Brandon, you have our stat of the day.
Yeah, so I you know, circling back to Comic-Con, I thought I'd do a little bit of, you know, fun trivia. And so as you all know, Comic-Con's been around for quite some time. It's closing in on its 50th anniversary. Comic-Con actually started in 1970 in a basement and had roughly 100 participants in it. And now it's one of the largest conventions in the world, attracting more than 150,000 people, you know, to San Diego, which is obviously really huge for our economy. Obviously, that much you know. However, I wanted to bring your attention to an event in 1979 where the event's treasurer's house was burgled for $12,000 in receipts. And the Comic-Con's fans actually kept the event afloat by donating $12,000 to keep the event afloat. So maybe we don't have Comic-Con today without those people donating some of their hard-earned money to, you know, keeping the event alive. So that was kind of the fun fact, fun trivia that I wanted to, you know, contribute to the podcast today.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It seems like everything good starts in basements or garages.
Yeah,
so
it starts.
I didn't even know San Diego had basements.
I don't know.
Great things have small beginnings. So, I mean,
call it a basement.
You can take that what you will, whether it's this podcast or something going on in your personal life. Obviously, you know, great things have small beginnings, and so, you know, whatever your imagination can take you to do.
That's super cute.
That was inspirational.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, obviously, I you know, Comic-Con is turned into quite a huge event, and so.
Well, I mean, I feel like it kind of ties into all this because in San Diego, during San Diego Chargers kind of trying to establish a home here, continue a home here and have a stadium built. There was often a lot of polls weighing out whether or not, you know, certain things are more important than the Chargers. And I know for a fact that Comic-Con often outweighed the Chargers, which is kind of sad because I love both. And I wish one of them was still here, but at the same time, it's you know, Comic-Con has been significant to the downtown economy, and it's going to continue until 2021, I know for a fact. And it'll be interesting to see if, you know, they can get things. I know they are talking about, like, expanding the convention center, and original talks where the Chargers were going to build a stadium that can accommodate additional Comic-Con overflow, but that never took place. So, yeah, that's where we stand.
Yeah, well, I know you guys were giving me shit earlier, but, you know, Sarah's home safe, just in case you guys were wondering. You guys were giving me shit about.
No, we got that in the group chat.
Tell me when you're safe. So, but just to wrap up, you know, thanks for listening again. You can follow us along on Twitter at Three Amigos in a Podcast. Listen to us anywhere, Podomatic, Twitter, or sorry, listen to us anywhere, Podomatic, iTunes, Podcast Addict. We have a website now put together. It's powered by WordPress, so it's going to be Three Amigos and a Podcast .wordpress.com. Obviously, we're too cheap until we get some sponsors to pay for something. So if you're out there to us,
Blue Apron, Squarespace.
Yeah, if you're out there listening to us and you want to sponsor us, you can send us an email, threeamigosandapodcast@gmail.com. Or if you have any comments or questions, or if we miss something wrong and you just want to yell at us, we appreciate that kind of communication as well. But Enrique, it was great having you on the podcast. We look forward to
hopefully you'll have you back soon.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Oh, I'm hoping to have you guys on. You know, hopefully we can do a sports influence podcast. So I'm looking forward to having you guys on, and it's been a pleasure seeing how you guys operate, and I hope for the best for you guys.
What's the name of your podcast again?
It's going to be called Because You Watched, and that should be launching mid-August. So
look out for that.
Yeah, definitely look out for that.
Definitely, you know, tune in, like, give it your ratings, and you know, give us your feedback on what you think.
But again, we're Three Amigos and a Podcast. Sign off. Thanks for listening. We appreciate that. Again, follow us on Twitter. Send us an email, 3amigosandapodcast. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.